whether it's the Wise Man, some Asian tacos, or some really fast responses from Justin on Twitter, we all know about balance. It's like our own local Chipotle. Chipotle is everywhere. And when you say Chipotle to somebody, they get all excited. But when you say to somebody like us that lives here in Toledo, balance, they freak out. So we're all excited. I'm especially excited because it's just a couple of blocks away from where I live. We're getting a new Balance. It opens. There was some preview stuff this past weekend, but Summit and Jefferson, right in the whole ProMedica hub, Promenade Park, Summit and Jefferson, a brand new Balance restaurant opens up on Thursday, May 10th. A couple of weeks ago, I got to meet PK Prakash at Maddie and Bella. Simply just wanted to thank him for doing what he's doing, bringing another great brand, more great food to downtown Toledo, including something in addition to the restaurant, which we'll get to. And it turns out PK is a big podcast lover. So I said, good. How about talking on one?
Cold world.
Hey, look at you working that keyboard.
Doing this way too. CJ, are we talking to that one?
I guess so.
Yeah, you're good. PK?
I'm all good.
There we go. All right, we're rolling. That's really presumptuous that you brought your partner in here, PK. But that's okay.
Yeah.
More to talk about balance. Prakash.
Yes,
right?
Sir.
Karamchandi?
Karamchandani. Three syllables.
Three? It sounds like more.
No,
sounds like more, but you go by PK.
It's a lot easier.
PK is the guy, the mastermind, the proprietor, the creator, everything behind Balance.
No. I mean, it's definitely a team effort.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
And so CJ is your partner, correct?
Yes, sir.
CJ, last name or
J-A-N-G, Jang.
Okay. Yeah. Let me explain how this little podcast all came about. Maddie and Bell last week or 2 weeks ago, I see PK. And I just simply wanted, as I mentioned to you, I wanted to thank you for bringing another spot downtown.
Super kind.
And also for the garden that we'll talk about. And we got to chatting about podcasts and things, and you're a big podcast fan. And now, is this your podcast cherry breaking? Have you ever been on one before?
I have never actually been on a podcast before. Okay. No, wait. That's wrong. I have been on a podcast before. But not like this. Not like sitting in a radio station, like a microphone and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I did one. I've done two, actually. I did one for Sam Meldon, and I gotta think of the other one I did.
What podcasts do you like? Like, describe your listening habits, because you're a very modern. You're 33, 34.
I'm 33. Yeah.
Okay. Very very modern listener. As we talked about, everything is on demand. Most people have fairly connected cars so they can find things when they want, how they want,
yep,
and where they want. So what podcast do you like?
Boy, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I get all my news and politics stuff through podcasts. I really like This American Life, the Stuff You Should Know podcast. I'm a big fan of Love Your Podcast. Obviously, I got hooked on that recently.
You could say that it sucks if you wanted
no,
to.
No, actually I like it. I like it a lot, man. It's got a cool format.
A friend of mine, did you listen to the one with Dr. Mata about the mental health and disorders, and she explained a lot of them?
I was halfway through that, and then once I started that, I realized that Q, who you interviewed,
yep,
that podcast dropped in, so I switched.
Gotcha.
I never
okay.
went back and finished it. But you were talking about things being on demand, so.
Yeah. I just posted something else to get ready for our NAMI walk coming up this weekend, but Dr. Mata's husband said he's very critical, and he's an avid podcast listener. And the reason I bring him up is because you said you like the format of this. And he says there is no format. And Eric's got to figure out what he wants to be. And I'm like, whoa. Not trying to be Joe Rogan here or anything like that.
Yeah.
This is just, this was always intended to be an extension, an on-demand version of the show that we used to do downtown. Because... CJ, were you familiar with the Morning Rush when we were over there by any means? And if not, don't worry about it.
Not too familiar.
Don't worry about it.
Only been there once. So.
Yeah, totally cool. And just people had seen us and they'd see us out and be like, we missed the show. And people lost a show that they really liked. It wasn't for ratings or anything like that. It was just a money thing, a business decision. So once we were able to wait out our non-compete, we came over here. We started doing a show on the weekends, but also cranking out lots of podcasts to give people what they want. So it's a little bit of everything. Sometimes we do bits of the old show where we're playing games and having fun. But for the most part, when I can snag people like you guys, I want to talk about what's going on around here.
For sure.
Balance opens up on Thursday.
Thursday.
Officially.
May the 10th.
PK, if I can we start? Can we start at the beginning? You were originally born in Houston.
Yes.
Moved here when you were young. Moved to this area.
Quite young, yes.
CJ, what about you? Where are you originally from?
I was originally born in South Korea. Okay. Came here when I was about 7.5 years old.
Okay.
Landed in Bowling Green, Ohio.
Okay.
Out of all the places.
How did the idea for Balance come about? And I hope you don't mind that I say this, but when I explain it to friends of mine from around the area who have never been, I'm like, it's like our... outside of the area, it's like our local Chipotle. Like,
yeah.
Because Chipotle, when you say Chipotle, people get silly over it. When you say Balance, people here who have been there get silly over it.
That's awesome.
And the brand is expanding. It's up to 4 now. So whichever one of you guys would like to start, how did it begin?
Yeah, so it kind of began because neither one of us could get a job after graduating from college. We both graduated from business school in 2008, and it was kind of the height of the financial crisis. Mm-hmm. So... after it was probably like 8 months of job searching, we both were, and then, you know, we still hung out together after school and stuff. So it started just kind of one of those on the couch conversations where we're like, man, we're tired of looking for jobs, tired of getting laughed out of interviews, couldn't really find anything we really liked to do.
What were you looking for?
I was looking for something in finance. I had an IT background.
Right.
And CJ,
I just had random things that I was interested in, but nothing in particular that really fascinated me. Mm-hmm. And I really couldn't see myself working at a cubicle either. So
right.
I just wanted to do my own thing. You know, I studied a little bit of personal training a while back, did fashion and apparel merchandising and textile development for a little bit. And, you know, I tried everywhere and I didn't really want to leave too far either. My parents, you know, they obviously reside in Northwest Ohio, and they had a restaurant background. Obviously, they owned a restaurant. So wanted to do something along that line and wanted to utilize what I had as a resource. So
can you think of that moment on the couch where Balance spawned?
Yeah.
Because it's a long way from
it was
fashion and training and IT and finance.
It was like a series of conversations, really. I mean, the first one was really like, man, we're tired of looking for a job. And CJ was like, I'd love to start another restaurant like my parents, but I want to do it different. You know, I want to clean it up. I want to offer some really clean food. As he mentioned, he's got a background in personal training, so he kind of knew how to create cuisine that was cleaner, but still had Asian roots.
CJ, what were your parents, what did they do?
So they still own it. They own a restaurant in Bowling Green, so even though we have a Korean background, they own a traditional Chinese restaurant there. So they've been running that since 1992. So, you know, being in a family business, you know, you kind of get dragged into it.
Sure,
So since I was like 14 years old, I helped them out, you know, in the kitchen, whatever they needed me to do. Prep veggies, clean, wash dishes. I mean, pretty much everything. So it was natural for me to learn all that. So I wanted to kind of utilize that. And, you know, the whole thing about Asian cuisine, you know, it's kind of like Chinese buffets and, you know, like cheap Chinese food. And I wanted to make something different out of that and make it more... I guess healthier in a way, but cleaner and more nutritious. So, you know, we were just kind of sitting one day. We were trying to come up with like a basic menu layout concept and a name and thought about it over and over again. And one day PK was like, what do you think about the word balance? And I was like, you know what? That actually sticks pretty well because we wanted that one word kind of name.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easily, you know, memorable. And it made sense to what we wanted to serve was a balance of nutrition, you know, balance of flavors. So we were like, you know what, let's go with it. And we started coming up with ideas for the menu and the concept overall. And we wanted to do something hip.
Balance fits nicely because it slides right in the middle where there was a void, I guess, to what you're speaking of. Because we had greasy Chinese places,
right.
And I've always gone under the guise, especially when I lived up in Detroit, the less safe the area is, the better the Chinese food
right.
is.
Like the little hole in the wall,
the place on Detroit and Monroe, mm-hmm. I had never been there before. I forget what it's called, but I got hit up for money walking in there. I'm like, this is going to be so poor. And then the other end of the spectrum are like all kinds of Japanese steakhouses.
Right, the hibachi.
And you, the balance is you guys right in the middle, Was that kind of the thinking?
In a way, because, I mean, if you go to, like, a hibachi steakhouse or a Korean barbecue joint, you know, I mean, they have great quality food.
Yeah.
No one can deny that. But you're talking per head, you're going to pay well over $20, $30. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to do something that was more affordable, you know, but without sacrificing quality or flavor over it. So
had you thought of, and I don't think back in 2008 we had the word fast casual.
It was still kind of developing, right?
Right,
it was
right.
Still
just
picking
emerging.
Up.
Mm-hmm. But right. we knew, going back to the economic discussion, like that conversation really started around restaurants are kind of a business you can't lose at, because mm-hmm. as long as you're priced well, people are going to go out to eat, whether they're having a tough week or they're having a great week. As long as it's fast, as long as it's, you know what you're getting, the mm-hmm. quality of it, you know what's in it, you're going to go. And fine dining's a little tougher. QSR, like nobody our age is going to fast food. So
what's QSR? Is that fast food?
Yeah, that's Push like through. your McDonald's through right. Chick-fil-A through stuff like that.
It's funny because I always grew up doing radio and media and branding and marketing. That's all. We're essentially all our own brands and marketers for one way, shape, or form. And I always learned growing up, be true to what you are. And every time, as I think we're... CJ, how old are you?
I'm 34. I'll be 35 this year, so...
Okay.
I'm a little older than him. Oh. Yeah. He always gives me crap about that.
We're all roughly the same age, and I think we can all remember every time McDonald's strayed from what they were good at, they wobbled.
Yeah.
And now they have to do that because they will cease to exist.
Right.
They've got to have those the cleaner options and more variety. And it's been fun to watch them bow down to the Chipotles of the world and to the balances, because where the competition for dollars is. Sorry to get into a drill down of restaurant business, but
no, you're not wrong. No, I think you're right. People are way more conscious of what they're eating, where it's coming from, what they're putting in their body.
Yeah,
you know, it's that's going to be our generation's lasting effect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What? So we came up with the name. We thought of the style of food. What was the next step, or one of the biggest early hurdles to getting balance off the ground?
Well, financing it.
Yeah, right.
Sure. Because we were both
who's
like,
going to pay for this
location,
stuff?
Finance.
Yeah.
I mean, those were
the whole thing. I mean, first was like, okay, so he was like, I want to start a restaurant. I was like, I can help you brand it and come up with a marketing section and put together a business plan. And then we went to like 8 different banks, got laughed out of every single one of them. Nobody was going to loan us any money in 2008.
Right.
For a restaurant concept.
Fresh graduates with,
fresh graduates.
Financial.
We were like 25, no financial backing.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have any money. Our parents are like first generation too, you know, so mm-hmm. it's not like we could just be like, hey, write us a check.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely figuring out financing. We didn't really actually figure it out. We just kind of went for it.
People keep coming in and over again and keep opening locations and bills get paid, right?
Yeah, okay. I mean, you know, we just burned a lot of credit cards.
Yeah.
So how did you open how did you make that financial jump? Because you're right, in 2008, nobody was giving money out for anything.
Yeah, so how we financed it, I could give you like a high level overview, but it's really, I would recommend nobody ever follow this. It's
okay.
Like a terrible, terrible way to finance and start a business. But basically we had like around 30 grand, a little bit less. It was mm-hmm. like 28 something in cash. And then we had a bunch of credit cards. And 2008 was the financial crash, but it was still a time when like a 25-year-old who had just graduated from school could write in, ask for a credit card, and get like a $40,000 or $60,000 credit line.
Did you dig through like old college mail? Like, hey, I knew MasterCard sent me like 100% guaranteed.
We went to every single one. We even got like every Capital One card we could get, every Amex card we could get.
Home Depot
credit lines. Yeah. Each one of us got one, and our parents got one. I mean, we had like 80 some thousand dollars in credit from Home Depot. We had IKEA back when they did that. And that's kind of like what you see if you go to our first store. Everything from there is either from Home Depot or IKEA.
And used up all our savings pretty much.
And that's, that was pretty much all we had. So we
it's
got
clever.
Some money from our landlord.
Too. Not advisable, but
it
very
worked.
Clever.
Yeah, we made it work.
Terrible
we
way to do it. So
it's high risk.
Yeah, it's better than kids getting those things in college and going to the mall and spending all that money. Like, at least you took all these credit card offers and invested in a wonderful idea. But you're right.
Yeah.
High risk.
At a really bad,
especially a restaurant
weighted average cost
always
of capital.
A very high
that was
risk.
A bad way to do it. But we got some money from our landlord. That's
That was like a major way that we funded it as well. Mm-hmm. That's called like tenant improvement dollars. It's pretty common in leasing spaces. The way that we built it was interesting because we used the TI money to pay for labor and bought all the materials ourselves. Mm-hmm. And that's how we split it, because we didn't have a lot of cash, but we could put all the materials for the build, like studs, drywall, paint, stuff like that, on credit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we did it. That was pretty much it.
How about development of the menu? Was there any testing in any way? Yeah. Or what? Oh, yeah.
A ton. I mean, a lot of changes. First year too. Was pretty much... Yeah. That's what we did. So, like, if you look at each store is a lot of improvement. And the best way I could describe it would be, like, how software and hardware is developed. Mm-hmm. You know, you develop your software, you realize hardware changes you need, you change your layout to match, and then you continue progression on software. And software would be, like, our menu from the customer side, mm-hmm. employee training on the other side. They're, like, two sides of the same coin. And then each one of our stores gets upgraded, either for really... efficiency, but also aesthetics, mm-hmm. and just access to resources. So if you look at our first store in Maumee versus the store in downtown Toledo, you can see where the concept is connected, but it's been a lot of progress. And each store in between, you can kind of see what we were working on.
So take me back to day one of menu development and some of the drill down of, we've got a good idea for this, and then people try it and like, this sucks, we got to do something else. Give me some of that if you could. Man.
So when we first started, we did 5 bowl choices, 5 protein choices, 5 starch choices.
Okay.
And we did the bowls in 2 different sizes. We had snacks, we had soups, we had... seasonal specials, which was not all tacos. We actually didn't have any tacos when we first opened.
Man, we did it all.
It was a mix of different dishes. So the first year we went through and we tried everything from...
burgers.
Yeah, we even did burgers.
Pasta.
Pastas.
What else? Different types of fried rice.
So this was all like while the store was open, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What about before that?
So before that, we didn't really have much of a test kitchen. So what we did was kind of go to other restaurant concepts. It was more of an excuse for a couple of guys in their 20s to like go try a bunch of restaurants right. and just kind of like nitpick at stuff that we didn't want to do. We didn't end up with a lot of stuff that we wanted to say like, wow, that's awesome. Let's bring that back to Toledo, because that was never our idea in the first place. We really wanted to create something unique and just do something different, do something that was our own. But in that process, we found a lot of stuff we didn't like that other places were doing. And like one of them is tips, the way that people like pay their employees, tip wages and stuff. It's just not fair. Offset, ecological offset, all of that kind of stuff. I mean, all these things that we picked up on that we were like, you know, we're never going to do that. That's not us. That's not who we are. So we found a little bit of who we are by identifying who we're not. And then the first year was really about finding out who we actually are.
What would you say your core tenets are? I mean, you guys went through business school, and I don't know if they ask you to identify this, but you're savvy enough business people to know that you have to live by these rules. Do you have tenets or commandments that you explain to employees and people like Justin and Q to carry out? What are they?
So we have our mission statement is actually very simple, and that's just to make people happy. That's our goal, is to... that's our philosophy when it comes to business, is just understanding all the inputs, understanding all the outputs, and making sure everybody's happy. I feel like a lot of times people get into business and they want to please their customers at the expense of their employees, or they want to please their customers at the expense of their vendors. And you have to be really conscious of all the inputs that makes your place what it is, and all the outputs that make it of value, and just try and balance everybody's expectations.
What was it like getting the second store open up?
The second store was the hardest store to open and train for. It was the hardest one to build. When we were coming out of Maumee and we decided that we wanted to do another location, we had trouble first finding the spot. And then when we found the spot, it was a lot smaller than what we wanted. Which it was like, in size comparison, it was like 1,400 square feet. And our typical store is 2,200 to 2,400 square feet. So it was almost, you know, it was like 60% of our normal size. So we just built out the kitchen. And then over the next 12 months, we got the space next to us. We added a dining room. Then we added a bubble tea bar. And we did all of it while we were open. And that was mainly because we only had enough money to do the kitchen. We didn't actually have enough money to do the rest. So the rest of it, we funded from cash flow.
Okay.
and basically built it ourselves. Like that T-bar that's at Sylvania, CJ and I, like, we put those studs together. We, like, YouTubed how to lay granite. Like, mm-hmm. that. Like, we built that thing.
Since you brought it up, explain to me the mystique of bubble tea. It is like a sub-brand of, like, balance is one religion, but the sub-religion of it is bubble tea.
Yeah.
So bubble tea is just like a fun drink. Like, I was exposed to it at a young age. CJ was, I'm mm-hmm. sure. It was pretty popular in, like, Asian cultures.
In big cities. Mm-hmm.
It's in a lot of places. I got really hooked on it when my younger brother was going to the University of Michigan.
Okay.
And I would go up and we'd grab, like, 8 bubble teas, bring them down, give it to our friends and stuff. But honestly, like, bubble tea is not that great for you. Mm-hmm. And so when we looked at adding it to balance, we wanted to deconstruct it a bit and put it back together in a way that kind of matched who we are a little bit better. So, you know, we took out, like, really cheap tea and powdered creamers and, mm-hmm. like, artificial sweeteners and stuff like that. We replaced it with organic tea that's fair trade. We replaced it with organic milk and flavors that are natural and, you know, put it all together again, you know, sweetened it with honey. So I think that's why people like it, because it's not like chalky, and
it's great bribe material.
Like, what do you mean?
Like, if I come across a 27-year-old woman or someone of that ilk and I go, can you do this for me? I will get you a bubble tea. It's done. Like I said, it's great barter material.
Oh man, that's great.
Because a lot of the girls that I used to work with would just live and die for the stuff. Like I said, cool. there's balance and there's that religion, but then there's, you say bubble tea and the eyes blow up even a little bit bigger. What has been, as there's now, well, there will be a fourth store, and we can talk about if you're getting even bigger than that, if you want to bring that up. What's been the biggest challenge moving along?
Making sure that we pick the right sites.
I think
that's
location,
that's
location, location.
Thing. Yeah, it really is. Downtown Toledo was especially difficult because we were looking for one where we could execute the farm and a restaurant right next to each other. So it had to be an ideal site for a farm. It had to be an ideal site for a restaurant. They had to be the same site. And it had to be kind of like in a visible, accessible place where you could walk to it or park close to it. So it couldn't be, you know, immediately when you're thinking, okay, I want to do an indoor farm, you're kind of thinking, I'm going to be over in the warehouse district or I'm going to be back away, but then you don't have access to people. And
right.
That means that your restaurant inevitably will fail. So
one of the buzzy things when the fourth store was announced, I think back in the fall, was that there would be an urban farm, which
yes.
you just alluded to. Could you explain what exactly that is and why it is a linchpin for the brand here locally?
Yeah, I think it's going to allow us to achieve our mission. You had mentioned mission earlier, mm-hmm. and one of them is to provide the most nutritious, freshest product that we can get to our customers. And the best way to do that is to vertically integrate. So if you look at a lot of other industries, this is pretty common, and it seems to be kind of weird in the restaurant industry. You don't see it happen a whole lot until you get to really large brands. But as we were looking at it, you know, we had been working with one of our vendors who was growing microgreens for us in this process.
Mm-hmm.
And through a series of discussions, we basically said, okay, we can scale this as long as we can get a bunch of the products that we use. Because if we're going to buy local, there's really two types. There's rooting vegetables, and then there's everything that's above the ground.
Okay.
And everything that's above the ground, you really only have like a few month harvest cycle, and it kind of comes in stages. And things that are rooting, you have a much longer harvest cycle because it's Ohio. You
right.
have frost level and stuff. So in this, we can work with the same partners that we do now and have them grow rooting vegetables, and then we can grow everything that's above the soil grade pretty much ourselves, absent of like broccoli, which we go through way too much of to do ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Kales and Brussels sprouts and tomatoes and all the peppers we use and all of our sauces and our dishes and herbs and microgreens, all our leafy greens that we use in salads or like our kimchi, stuff like that. We can grow all of that ourselves. And then culinarily, you know, CJ has access to pretty much anything he wants to grow. So if he wants to grow a Korean shisho or specific types of peppers, we can do that now. So it kind of unlocks culinarily anything that we want to do.
Will people be able to see the urban farm?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. That was kind of one of the other things that, if it was possible, we wanted to do. So we found this ideal site. It's at Summit and Jefferson, mm-hmm. first floor of a parking garage. So it doesn't seem like it would be probably the best spot. It was a little bit bombed out. It hadn't been occupied in many decades.
Right.
So it didn't have gas, water, or electric when we got in there. It needed envelope work. It needed exterior work to the building in order to close it off to the elements. But we got through all of that. And the coolest thing about it is that it has a bunch of retail spaces in it. We were able to get 8,600 square feet for the farm, 22-foot tall ceilings, which is really hard to do. It's basically in a concrete box. So it has 12 inches of concrete above, below it, 10 feet of tempered air all the way around it, meaning that it's heated around the space, so it doesn't cost as much to heat, to cool it, to control humidity, all the things that are important for controlled environment agriculture.
Mm-hmm. So. But people will be able to see it? Like, they'll be able to walk by on Summit or Jefferson and see it?
Yeah, definitely. Not from the street. You'd have to come into the arcade. But yeah, if you live in the new apartments that are attached to the Tower of the Maumee, you can get access to food there that we're going to be growing on site.
That's great.
Or the Riverfront Apartments, which is cool. Or if you work there, yeah, you'll be able to walk by it, check it out. Be pouring, like, magenta-colored light out
Sounds
into
good.
The hallway.
You expansion is potentially coming to maybe more here, but outside the region as well?
Yeah, we want to try and prove our concept outside of Toledo and see if we can do it. And we have a lot of really awesome people. I think that's probably what makes Balance the best part of what it is.
Right. The people are more than anything.
I mean, yeah.
They are, a lot of companies give lip service about people and personnel. They are our greatest invaluable asset, but it's a lot of times just lip service.
Yeah.
But having met your people and people like you and Justin, like, it's meaningful. You talk about making people happy. Food can be replicated. Different kinds of food can make us happy, but it's experiences from people along with that food that can bring it to that goal of wanting to make people happy.
Yeah, definitely. So we wanted to provide, like, the next level of opportunity for the people who are at Balance. And a lot of them were from Cleveland, so we decided to make Cleveland our next stop. So we're building a store there right now. It'll be open this year. It's on Euclid and 6th. So we tried to mirror the projects that we were doing in downtown Toledo and downtown Cleveland so we can learn from each one.
Right.
But yeah, that's our next stop.
Busy times to be in the restaurant business, especially a successful one. It's a double-edged sword. You have a family.
Yes.
A wife, couple of kids, two kids?
I have a wife who I met CJ through, so we're all friends.
Okay.
I have a 3-year-old daughter and a 10-month-old son. So,
okay.
Yeah, things are crazy right now.
CJ, family or anything?
Nope, I'm good.
your family is the kale and everything that you want to grow in the garden, right?
I have my employees, and those are my kids.
How do you manage this as far as a lifestyle, being a successful restaurateur and being a good family dad with two young kids and opening a restaurant in Cleveland? How do you manage all this? That's a lot.
Yeah.
Have you managed to put 27 hours in a day?
I can't find more time in the day. I try to be as efficient as possible, but I mean, it's definitely a lot going on. I'm having the time of my life, though. I mean, it couldn't be any more fun than what I'm doing
right
now.
Do you have any like personal, I don't want to say short term, but like midterm and then long term goals? Like, you want to pass this off to someone or settle down and live on a boat on the Maumee or something?
For what? For Balance or just
just yourself.
Myself?
Yeah.
Well, I feel like I've been trying to build up the business for a while, and I wanted to create the family life that my wife and I wanted, regardless of the fact that I'm doing the Balance thing. And now I really want to, like, turn my attention to myself. You know, I've listened to your podcast a few times. You talk about personal health, taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
And that's not something I've really done over the last few years. I kind of made a lot of investments in things outside of myself and outside of, like, my personal health. And sometimes you do that in order to get ahead in areas of your life. But at the end of the day, if you don't have health, what do you have?
Exactly. So. Yeah, I like to say that happiness is a currency, and maybe not in a truly literal sense. I can't go to my Edison bill or my First Energy and go, yeah, I am. I'm happy today, so I'm just going to write that down on the check. but if you can't be happy, if you can't function at work to your peak abilities, it takes away from everything in your life. It really does.
Yeah.
And these are the years in our lives where we work our butts off to, you know, hopefully retire a little early or at least pull back a little bit. Mm-hmm. What is your normal day like? What time do you get up? What's your normal day look like?
So every day is pretty much the same. So I work like 7 days a week.
Okay.
I usually wake up with my kids at like 6:30 or 7, unless they wake up earlier. Hang out with them for a few hours, make it to work by like 9 or 10, somewhere in there. So my morning time is kind of my time for my family.
Mm-hmm.
I'll work until, say, 6 or 7, which is always random. It's a random day. Sometimes sure. I have to drive Stuff to happens. Cleveland or drive somewhere else, or sometimes I'm in town. And I try and make it home for dinner. Sometimes I don't always do that, but I do make it home by the time my kids go to sleep. And then I hang out with my wife until 9:30, and then I'll stay up from like 10 till 1 and do stuff on my computer, like emails or work. That's kind of my end of it.
What do you do to detach? What do you do to have fun besides hanging out with family and kids, like something that that PK likes?
That's what I was talking about earlier. I don't really do that.
Oh, okay. You know?
So like taking,
if you could.
Yeah, if I could, I would reallocate a little bit more time for myself, like find a hobby again or...
Well, what do you like?
I mean, I like playing racquetball.
Okay.
I like swimming. Okay. I like, you know, just your usual exertion stuff, okay. Tennis, whatever.
CJ, what's your day like?
It's more fixed, I guess you could say. I'm more of the in the operations. So, mm-hmm. You know, I wake up in the morning, you know, and then usually start out my day off at the office, go over things with the administrative office, and then kind of make my rounds to each store, mm-hmm. Making sure everything's good. And we have an app that we use for a lot of our communication as well, like Slack. So we communicate, keep in touch with everybody. So it makes it a lot more convenient and mm-hmm. More efficient. So
sure.
You always know what's going on with all the stores. So
right.
We have a good hierarchy system as well. So we have a very reliable managers and leaders that we hired. And that's what, like you said, you know, the culture of the company and who you have as employees, it makes the biggest difference.
Was it hard for you, CJ, first to hand stuff off, to delegate? Because you can hire the best people, and even then still you've got to like stop yourself and
right.
Go, I can't do everything. This is why I brought good people in, so they can help me out.
I remember like me and PK talking about that and going through that phase way in the beginning, mm-hmm. You know, in the first couple years, because, you know, things were definitely a lot tougher back then.
Right.
And you know, of course, like, you know, it's always hard to gain trust and earn trust.
Yeah.
So we did at first. And then we started, you know, getting more employees who were more loyal. You know, mm-hmm. You used to see it throughout the years. I mean, people like you mentioned, Justin. We also have people like Lauren that we've had since day one. So she's been with us.
She was one of our 10 original hires.
She's literally going on for 9 years.
The OG.
Years now.
Yeah, now she's
we call it the OGs.
She does our human resources now.
So yeah, so we have a handful of people like that. So who's been with us well over 5 years.
PK, I'll ask you this. I'm sure you probably had it like a delegation issue as well. We all go through it as managers. What's one thing you will not delegate because it is your pet, it's your passion project that you just appreciate, you will take on the extra work to do it because you enjoy it?
Oh man, so that would have been marketing. So
okay.
I did all the branding for Balance, I did all the marketing for it, but Justin, as you mentioned, he's amazing. He's
mm-hmm.
an awesome artist outside of work. He brings so much to Balance, and that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to be Balance's brand manager.
Mm-hmm.
And so in January, I handed that title off to him, which is awesome. I still help him out with marketing stuff, but he's been absolutely crushing it this year. So at some point, you know, I'm going to have to like delegate everything, but it's cool. At this point, I just kind of pick up everything that isn't picked up and do it and handle it, and it's fine.
You gotta let them go sometimes, you know.
You do.
Yeah.
You sink or swim. Mm-hmm. And I always would say when I would have people, young people come in, whether they be interns or people just be interested in radio, and since this is our podcast, or we podcast, we can curse. I left people with three simple lines: don't fuck up. That's all it is. And then if you needed me to tell you more than that, that for the most part, what we're doing, no one dies. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nothing life shattering. Just don't fuck up. You have had an interest. I've taught you everything that I could. I believe you're ready. Don't fuck up. And if you do, we will fix it.
Yeah.
CJ, you said operations. I saw you in the kitchen or behind mm-hmm. the counter on Friday night. Do you have something you refuse to delegate or something? Because you strike me as more of the artful type, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. I guess you could say that.
So are there certain things
I'm
you won't
definitely more of a visual guy for okay. sure. Words kind of like reading things kind of bore me, to be honest with you. I've always been in that kind of realm, you know. Like I said, my first major was, you know, fashion, apparel, and textiles. So
mm-hmm.
I was really into that thing, those kinds of things, and, you know, personal training, stuff like that. So having that kind of background, and you know, PK and I have always been foodies. That mm-hmm. was the first and foremost important thing. I think that's why we got into this kind of business, is because we're very passionate about food. So if you ask me if it's something that I would not really would like to give up or hand over, it's probably the culinary side, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That is probably one of my forte, and I enjoy
menu innovation.
Yeah. I enjoy doing that a lot. So coming up with different flavors and combining that together with the texture and presentation and all that together. So I do have a hard time kind of like issuing my people like, you know, come up with this dish or whatever. That's
right.
Kind of like my thing.
Sure.
So I like to kind of keep it that way.
No, I get
but
it.
I always love getting feedbacks from my employees, mm-hmm. and my managers. And
customers sometimes.
Yeah, and customers too. We once in a while, every time we do a menu swap, we do that. We've been currently doing that twice a year. But now we're kind of going to switch it over and kind of like make certain menu items and switch it off more often by fewer items and just kind of continue to rotate that around over the year. So, coming up with the menu innovation, that's definitely my favorite thing to do. So it'll be hard for me to kind of totally give it up. I don't think that will really happen.
Sure.
But I could definitely see myself getting help. You know, someone like a right-hand man that could kind of like advise me a little bit and kind of help me out with, you know, day-to-day creations, because it takes time, you know. I don't just, you know, I'm not some whiz that just comes up with a perfect dish and then just run with it, you know, in like 2 weeks.
Right.
It definitely takes time, and sometimes it takes months to really perfect it or to perfect a couple of things. So I would keep that for myself, but always, you know, constructive criticism always help, and just honest opinions really do help get, you know, perfecting the dish.
What's your crown jewel?
My personal crown jewel is the Bang Bang sauce. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's a very versatile sauce. It's very spicy, but, you know, every time I get a good compliment from, like, spicy lovers and, you know, people who are, like, just diehard, you know, sauce fans, that's my forte. I always tell myself, if I wasn't, you know, if we didn't create balance, I would probably like working at another restaurant as a saucier, because that's just something that I love doing. Just kind of formulating different ratios and different flavors and combining that together to just come up with a very, you know, tasty sauce.
Let's wrap up with just like some local Toledo love. You guys both being foodies, other spots you like going to or you respect, you tip your hat to, whether it be small or large.
Oh yeah,
hole in the wall or.
There's so many. I mean, I don't want to offend anybody if we miss anyone.
Just start listing,
you know,
them off.
But I mean, like I said, love Aaron Lawson at Brim House. Kango with Kango and Josh.
Kango has a similar story as you. So I live in that building.
Mm-hmm. Oh, do you?
And he lived in that building too. Before
before he moved.
And he to get to know him. His family owned restaurants, I think, in New York City. And
yep, he was trained in New York City. Yep.
Yeah, similar story to you. I love those guys.
Great guys. Bangkok Kitchen and Maomi, for an example, local mom and pop.
Best
I
guy.
Mean, they hustle hard, and I mean, they're always packed, and there's a reason why they are. You know?
How about like a hidden gem, something that nobody brings up? Like if I go, give me places in Toledo you like. People will name Balance.
So Mexican restaurant.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people know about La Mexicana.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, you do. It was on your podcast the other day when you were talking about the you were talking about Sofia Quintero on Broadway, and you were talking about
the place
about,
across the street. Yeah, I don't know the name of it.
You know what it is.
That's so bomb. That place for tacos. There's a Korean grocery store that has a little cafe next to it. That's at Five Points.
Okay.
That's really good.
Oh, I know you're it's across from Planet Fitness.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking
that's
about.
That's legit.
Okay.
There's a Thai place that's like that over on 280, but I haven't been there in a couple of years. You guys been to Rasa yet?
I've not.
Rasa's good.
I work with the Toledo Soup. Did I bring
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah.
And we had tried to track them down, but I think that they're just a little overwhelmed at this point. So new, so good. So they're really buzzing right now, but I've not.
Yeah.
I've not been there.
That's a good place.
We have some good places here.
We have an amazing food scene.
Yeah.
Oh, Saigon?
Very good. I got there for the first time not long ago.
Yeah, the place is awesome. Yeah. They put in a special hood. This is like some restaurant geek stuff, but a special hood just so they could do charcoal for their kebabs.
Just
so you get that extra level of flavor. I mean, you could get like a gas-powered char grill, but they legit like warm up coals, put them in a trough, and grill your kebabs just so that you can get that extra char.
It was good, and I like Mediterranean food because I lived up in Detroit for quite a long time, and there's a lot of that Middle Eastern food up there.
Yeah, we're spoiled with it here. Yeah. After I travel, I realize how much we have here and how good it is.
And I joke on the show, I used to say we're famous for, obviously, our art museum, our zoo. People know the Mud Hens. And I joke about it, but it's legit. We have a lot of Mexican restaurants here, and they're all really good. And you can side-eye me if you want, but the only reason I haven't been to that place, La Michi...
La Michoacana.
It's because they don't have a liquor license. There's no alcohol there, right?
I don't think they do.
They don't serve there. They don't serve. But like El Tipico also doesn't serve.
Oh, yeah, great restaurant.
Mm-hmm. All the San Marcos. But the original Poco Loco and even Casino Poco de Carlos, they're all really good. My girlfriend went out the other night to someplace called La Chalupa. And she brought me some of it home. I don't know where it is.
Haven't heard of that.
But it was good. It was really good. She brought it home and it's been sitting in a styrofoam box for 3 hours and it was delicious.
It's affordable, it's quick, and it's good. Yeah.
Right, right.
Can't go wrong with that.
And then if you want to make even more money, CJ, and you can find some more hours, you can take all of us who eat all this food too much to the gym. Because we do. We indulge in our foods here.
Hell yeah.
We'll wrap up with this.
Yeah, sure.
Everybody, a lot of people read like the Bill Gates story or Steve Jobs, and it's like I can if he did it, I can do that, and I don't have to go to college. There's millions of people who try to follow those same paths of being on a couch or in a garage and turning it into million-dollar ideas. But there are so many failures. What would you offer to the next CJ and PK, people who want to open any kind of local business, restaurant, just start up shop, whatever it might be?
You've got to really, I mean, first off, you can be successful in anything you do, as long as your heart's in it. And what I mean is, the first few years are really tough. Like, CJ and I didn't pay ourselves. We opened in February of 2010, and we didn't pay ourselves a paycheck out of the business until March of 2013. So like 3 years we worked, and basically we just ate at balance. We had enough money to like get a gym membership.
Okay.
And other than that, we just slept and worked every single day.
One thing to this point that you had mentioned a couple of minutes ago was you work 7 days a week, and you seem to have it at least contained, but this isn't a 50-hour a week project. I mean, you always got to be dialed in, but you're right. Passion can drive that.
Yeah, it has to, because you have to start quantifying what you're doing outside of the hours that you put in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can never turn it off.
Right.
The responsibility, it always starts with you. No matter how much you talked about delegation earlier, and no matter how much we delegate, the buck is always going to stop with us.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get used to it. It's a different lifestyle, and you have to be into that. You have to be okay with not having a work-life balance, instead just integrating work into your lifestyle, if that makes sense. Like, even if I go on vacation or I travel somewhere, I'm on my phone all the time.
Sure. Phones are all 24/7, 365.
I mean, people would ask me doing the morning show, what time do you work, or when are you done, like 10 o'clock or like 11? I'm like, no, that's when I do the other job. So I usually work like from 4:45 in the morning when I wake up till when I go to sleep, because the emails don't stop.
Right,
it's good and bad that we can be so nimble with our phones, but they are a tether in some ways. You're right. It's always on, and our friends and loved ones that we go on vacations with hate that we won't put the phone down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in some ways, those phones allow us to have these nicer things in life.
But they eventually understand it. You know?
They get it.
Yeah.
My wife gets it now, which is cool.
Yeah. You just got to enjoy what you do. I mean, that's all I can say. You really, truly have to be passionate about what you are about to dive into. And you got to be able to commit for the next 5 years of your life.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing comes easy, obviously. Everybody knows that. I'm not trying to sound cliche, but that's the truth.
Right.
I mean, you got to really enjoy every day. And the people that you work with, you got to enjoy and be passionate about. And you should be able to see the growth that you can see with the people that you work with and you partner up with.
Steward your business, not own it. You know, and it's a mental difference I meet when I talk to a lot of people who are trying to start a business, and they're like, "Yeah, I want to do this. I want it to be more than my job. I want to do X, X, and X." And I mean, all that's great, but the money that comes in, it has to be reinvested. You know, you're the last person to pay yourself in a business.
Mm-hmm.
You're the last one. You have to pay all your vendors, all your employees. Pay your rent, your landlord, reinvest in your business, and when your business needs nothing, then you're the last one to eat, and that's okay. I mean, because you do it because you're you're proud of what you build.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I still am. I love what I do every day when I go to work.
It's awesome.
I tell people all the time, they're like, how do you deal with it? How do you do it? Kind of like what you were asking earlier. And the simple answer is I just kind of wake up every day. I go to work with my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. I mean, I still do that 8 years in. I love what I do. It's something different every day. And, you know, it's awesome.
Well, hopefully, one day down the road, maybe wishfully, whether it be 10 years or 20 years, PK and CJ can be in the annals of Steve Jobs and people like that. We were right, we were in a garage. We were on a couch with Home Depot credit cards.
I do remember like sitting in PK's basement or not apartment in college, and we're right after college.
We got to move out of the garage.
We're just chilling with him and his wife Navi and me, and we were just like coming up with like these menu item names, and that was like one of the flashbacks that I still have. Is like coming up with a name like Wiseman and Sassy.
Trying to do the logo
and all this and that, and yeah, that is one day I still remember, you know, and that was like the start of it, you know, and you kind of cherish that.
Let me write the foreword to the book if I could. There they were on a couch. It wasn't even a couch. It was an oversized chair.
Eating some fast food or something.
Fast food. Going, this sucks. We needed to work somewhere we can feed ourselves and open Home Depot and Capital One credit cards until they say no.
And not feel guilty after eating it.
So. Exactly. PK, CJ. CJ, good to meet you.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Best
too.
Of luck in the world, thanks though. So I don't think you will need you. It because you have delicious food at Balance. Officially opens Thursday, which is what, the 9th?
May the 10th.
May the 10th. Yep. May the 10th. There you go. Balance downtown, Summit and Jefferson. And the garden should be when?
We're going to keep trying to work on it.
Okay. Yeah. Toledo weather doesn't always cooperate, even though it's inside, but
yeah.
Awesome. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you so much.